Good evening. We've come to the last part of Dogen's exposition before he starts answering questions from the rubes. And this last part is all about explaining enlightenment in very enthusiastic terms, I guess you could say. For instance, when one displays the Buddha mudra with one's whole body and mind, sitting upright in this samadhi, even for a short time, everything in the entire Dharma world becomes Buddha mudra, and all space in the universe completely becomes enlightenment. Therefore, it enables Buddha Tathagatas to increase the Dharma joy of their own original grounds and renew the adornment of the way of awakening. That's very colorful language, very elaborate. But it's really talking, the Buddha mudra is what we've just been enacting as we sit. We are sitting the way Buddha sat. And that itself is enlightenment itself. So it's not as complicated as we might think. In fact, it's not nearly as complicated as we might think. It's pretty simple. It's just that we keep getting enthralled by all the things that we think about ourselves, about what we do, about the things that happen. All the things that go on in our mind seem so real, and we become very attached to what's going on in here, wherever it's happening. And you begin to think about it, and you think, well, where is it happening? Is it here? No, we can't really identify where thinking is even coming from. It's just coming. So we can't really say even I think, because it isn't really me who's doing the thinking. The thinking is doing me. But as long as we attach to the thought of ourself as ourself, we are unaware of the other side. The space between thoughts, you could say. The boundlessness that we experience in Zazen. So Zazen itself is what Dogen would call the reality, and what we call the real is the dream. So it isn't to throw away our everyday mind. There's no way. But it's very important to discern, very carefully discern, what the everyday mind is and how it operates through us as human living beings on this earth. And that's what Dogen is talking about with this elaborate language, that the sitting practice itself brings us into another kind of reality. A kind of reality that's much bigger than we imagine, and that is selfless. we're not burdened by a self. It's not that the self is a bad thing, it's just that it's a very heavy thing to carry around. And because it's mostly imagination, it's a big job to be a self. We have to keep operating on the story in order to keep it up to date and keep it what we would call real, even though it's just a story. Uchiyama Roshi has wonderful things to say about this, and it's hard to even choose what to share because it's also much more easily understandable. But he's got in great big caps in the middle of his discussion, he suddenly throws in this big shout that says, "You're really in trouble if you think I will really be somebody if I do zazen and attain enlightenment. I'll really be somebody if I do zazen and attain enlightenment. You'll really be in trouble." He says, if we look at it logically, jujyu samai is the self that is only the self. So basically, it cannot be transmitted from one person to another. I'm just me. You're just you. Shakyamuni is just Shakyamuni. There is no way that the Dharma was transmitted from Shakyamuni to Mahakashapa. Yet the wonder of zazen is that although Shakyamuni is sitting the self that is only the self, just being Shakyamuni, when Mahakashapa sits zazen in the very same way, Mahakashapa also becomes the self that is only the self, becomes Mahakashapa. This is the reason why Dogen Zenji said in the first paragraph, all Buddha Tathagatas together have been simply transmitting wondrous Dharma and actualizing incomparable awareness for which there is an unsurpassable, unfabricated, wondrous method. Zazen is the standard. The standard of our life. It's interesting, isn't it? Is that our standard? It is when we come to the sit at the Quaker Center. It is when we go to Sesshin. But driving a car, he quotes Dogen, for all ancestors and Buddhas who have been dwelling in and maintaining Buddha Dharma, practicing upright sitting in Jujyu Zamai is the true path for opening up enlightenment. So he talks about comparison, about how we're always comparing one thing and another, including ourself against other people and our mind against our other mind, trying to figure out by comparison where we fit, when in fact there is no way to compare. Each comparison is defining the other. So when you say war, the other side of that is peace. And so peace and war belong together. up and down belong together. There's no way to separate one thing and make it higher than another thing without another thing being higher than that. It all is in flux. And so to try to pin ourselves down in some kind of position in which we are higher or lower is also a big job and not necessary. It's very natural, very, very natural. We start out that way and then we're educated that way. Much of our education is getting grades and then comparing our grades and telling our parents our grades and et cetera, et cetera. So we have to walk around with whatever our grade is and think of that as me. And yet it's all arbitrary. When you think of the bigness and boundlessness of life, it's very narrow and small. He says, we should be careful when we use words such as to attain enlightenment or actualize or manifest. Gen, the Japanese word, literally means to appear. Doesn't mean something which was not there previously suddenly appears. It means that eternal reality, which cannot be hidden nor revealed, which neither exists nor ceases to exist, must be actualized right here, right now. Also, kai, a word for opening, does not mean that something which has been closed is opened. Even when we use the expression to attain enlightenment, it does not mean that someone who has been deluded becomes enlightened. We actualize the enlightenment which is inherent in each one of us. This is the meaning of attaining enlightenment. He says the Buddhist usage of the term is very difficult to understand. So he says the idea of transforming delusion to attain enlightenment is easy to understand in terms of our ordinary way of thinking, yet it's not in accord with the Buddha Dharma. In Buddhism, the dichotomy of delusion and enlightenment, one side, another side, is transcended from the very beginning. We have to practice and actualize right now, right here, the Buddha Dharma, which transcends both delusion and enlightenment. And this is great enlightenment. So from the first, we're neither deluded nor enlightened. Reality itself exists before we divide it into delusion and enlightenment. We're practicing this reality right here and right now. We practice with enlightenment as our base. This is why Koban always said that our practice isn't a religion, that from our practice it can be a foundation for any number of religions, any number of ways of creating sangha, of finding ways of teaching and sharing wisdom with each other, elaborating on the wisdom that we discover, the enacting of this sitting practice as we do or do not create an institution around it. There are lots and lots of ways of doing it, and through human history we have seen since the caveman, I would think, different ways of people discovering this boundlessness that supersedes the hard edges of ordinary life and is there is a, what can I say, a reaction to the depth of our knowledge, so that we no longer take our life for granted, that it becomes mysterious and large, and in many ways beyond us. Uchiyama Roshi says, people often ask, are desires eliminated when we sit zazen? Good luck. And he says, there is no time when our desires or thoughts stop welling up. As long as we are human, various kinds of thoughts come up, no matter how hard we practice zazen. Since it's quiet when we sit, thoughts come up much more than usual. If you're a rich person, you may think that you have to renew your bank deposit. We, who have nothing to do with either money or social status, think about women, he says. This honest monk. Then he goes on to talk about his poor disciples who are celibate and are stuck with thinking about women when they're trying to sit zazen. He says, you will understand clearly that from the point of view of the reality of life, the thoughts we have been caught up in are nothing more than secretions from our brain. It is just scenery painted by the secretions from our brain. There's a wonderful practice in writing poetry where you write a poem and put in it everything that you think you know and everything you feel. And then you put it aside and take up the same subject and write it again. And then you write it again. And you can do that 10 times and come out with 10 totally different poems. Because the scenery keeps changing, the scenery of the mind keeps changing. It keeps squirting out thoughts and more, and so we keep creating this life and world from our thinking. So it's not that we shouldn't be doing that, but if we don't see clearly how that's happening, we believe our thoughts and end up being really even more stupid than we really are, a lot more. And we see it in ourselves every time we blunder because we haven't seen clearly that that was just an idea I had. So it's hard to see in everyday life, and that's why we sit, because when we sit, all we see is what's going on in our mind. And we become very, very familiar with it, with the action of it, the activity of it, and very familiar with our body and all its ups and downs and aches and pains and beauties and strengths. The whole package just sits down in one place and breathes and becomes itself And so he says, when you sit zazen and let go of thoughts, any kind of thought disappears. And we experience that over and over and get very interested in what I'm thinking and then realize, oh, look, I'm thinking, and it's gone. Where'd it go? Gone. All kinds of thoughts can be released if we do not grasp them. When we see things from the ground of this letting go of thoughts, we can clearly see that all thoughts are nothing other than secretions from our brain. He says, people have a preconception about attaining enlightenment, that someone who has been deluded becomes enlightened through some kind of sudden experience, and he will never be deluded again. This is not true. When you sit and let go of thoughts right now, you can certainly do it. At that moment, all restraints which bind you hand and foot disappear at once. This is attaining enlightenment. However, on the next day, the woman's face again appears, or the bank statement, or whatever else is the bother. It will appear again and again, not on the next day, but today or even the next moment. So it's not true that if you attain enlightenment once, you've finished the great matter and you need not practice anymore. As long as there is life, a kind of ready-made enlightenment does not work. Dried, frozen, or preserved enlightenment is no good. The enlightenment you attained yesterday has already passed away today. That's why Hakuin Zenji said, you know, you may have a great enlightenment sometime, but if you get stuck with it and try to hold on to it and have some more of it, you get in the way of the next one that's coming. You don't make any room for it. You have to let it go. Really let everything go, moment by moment, so that we're free for the next moment, free to receive the next moment, and live it, enact it. He says, Dogen Zenji's zazen is simply the most fundamental matter of our life. It is the matter of the life of oneself, which is born, lives, and dies. Therefore, it is essentially different from the kinds of zazen used as training for conventional and worldly purposes. I want you to understand this thoroughly. This matter of life, which is born, lives, and dies, is not a matter of individuals separated from other individuals. This is the matter of the self that is only the self, the present that is only the present of each and every one of us who lives out our own life. So it's not about a matter of becoming a great person. So I think that's enough. He's not done, of course, but there's time for questions. Discussion.
Yeah.
How
sad.
That would be very, very sad. It would be very weird. That's a wonderful way of looking at it. It sort of twists it a little bit, so, oh, oh, what would it be?
There are so many people who don't look.
Yes.
And so for them, it's not real. It's not there. But for those who do look, and it is there, it's amazing.
It's amazing. Yeah. And that's why it's so hard to talk to others who don't practice, because it's an experience. It's not a thought. It's not an idea. So you can tell it as an idea, and it just doesn't compute. It does. It's not people's experience, so you really can't say. And yet, I think we become it as we practice. If we have a serious, long years practice, that our way in the world isn't the same because we're awake to how this whole thing is operating and are willing to acknowledge and live it, be discerning about it, and see through it. See that it's not so serious as perhaps we might think, and also that it's awesome and very mysterious at the same time. So there's room for devotion in this, which can be a religious devotion with lots of bowing and chanting and offerings of various kinds. Krishnamurti always said, be careful about that. He said, you can chant blah, blah, blah. He said, you can put a Coke bottle up on a mantelpiece and then go, Coca-Cola, 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 and still have the same effect. So there's something in us that responds. And if we start building up ideas and thoughts around our response, then we can turn it into something a little peculiar, a little strange. So that, too, is a matter of discernment, of understanding how these things work in us, how it is when we fall to the floor and raise our hands. We're raising Buddha. And then we stand up.
When you're chanting the Heart Sutra, I think once you said it's more about the being together with the chanting, that's it?
Well, it is. We can do it by ourselves. I mean, we do it by ourselves. I have a friend who buries roadkill and chants the Heart Sutra as he's burying a squirrel or a possum or something. I mean, it's always available to us as an expression. But chanting it together is an experience of Sangha, an experience of that transmission that Uchiyama Roshi was talking about, that Shakyamuni and Mahakashapa were separate beings, but together. And we experience it as we chant together.
So does it matter what, I know that sounds really stupid, but does it matter what we chant in that case? I know the Heart Sutra is a very core thing.
I think when we chant the Heart Sutra, it's impossible to figure out what it means while we're chanting it. And it just complicates things. That's just more thinking.
So why don't we do other things?
We could.
Keep us on our toes.
Well, there's a Daihi Shindarani. That's a wonderful thing because nobody really knows what that means. There are the ancestors. There's the Sandokai. Oh, there are lots and lots of things that we could chant. It would be
my favorite one is the metta, because it, you know, being a simple person, you kind of I kind of understand.
Yes,
it.
Yes.
And we don't do a lot of it, but I'm still trying to grasp the chanting thing, you know, and the effect that obviously it's important because we do it.
Well, in terms of music, it's like playing with one hand or both, isn't it? I mean, it just brings a wider...
When we chant together, it's like playing with both hands mm-hmm. versus one hand.
Yeah.
But to me, it's like playing the same thing over and over and over. I mean, unless you have a connection with that melody, I guess I'm shooting myself here as I'm speaking.
Yeah. Well, we don't have a melody. In Vietnamese practice, they do. And if you look up Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village online, uh-huh. you'll hear some of that beautiful chanting. And they actually write the music out for it and teach people the tune. And we're Japanese in a samurai tradition, so it's much more
monotone.
Yeah, and Japanese language is very monotone anyway. Pop, 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 like that. So actually doing the Metta Sutra, because it's in English and is emotional in a way that most things are not. It's very moving, which is why we include it in our little group.
So if I'm not touched by the chanting of the Heart Sutra, I need to look deeper into it?
Yeah, we just listen. Mm. Just make your chanting listening to others and blending in with them. That's the point. It's not about you or me. It's about the whole sound that's happening, that is happening through us. And that's a wonderful experience. That's when we drop the self, because the self is just one little piece of the whole. It makes beautiful sound.
Well, I mean, in choir, that's the most important thing, is to blend.
Yes. Yes.
You can hear it when it's happening.
You can. In fact, last week when we chanted, it was beautiful. Mm. I don't know why, but it all came together in a very wonderful way. Well, it's 8:00. So we have a half day sit on Saturday and ceremony immediately afterward for Wendy and for Hisayo. And I'm all ready. usually I wait till the last minute and then it's a scramble, but this time I thought, I think I'll just do it slowly, very slowly. It was such a pleasure. So I hope you all can be there, and we'll go out to lunch afterwards. So looking forward to that. Congratulations. Congratulations. So are there announcements? Paul?
I do have some travel pictures. There's only a few of them, if you'd like to look. I made really big ones.
Great.
So I'll stretch them out here.
Oh, super. Thank you.
Enjoy it.
Wow. Yes. Yeah.
I think we still have chocolate.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Pretty good chocolate, too.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, I agree.
Incredible.
Well, Jeffrey's going to be gone next Tuesday, so we don't have an opener for Tuesday.
Okay, good.
Will you be and Bob be able to help set up Saturday?
Yeah.
I'll be here early and bring the table that we used before, and we can figure it all out. Yeah. Good. We do our 1 minute sit.